You're listening to the Chad Easty Show on demand. Good for you. Now download the KFYO app and listen live weekday afternoons, 5 to 7 p.m. Central.
Broadcasting from the great state of Texas, news and views with a Lone Star perspective. You can sound off during the show by sending Chad a text at 806-680-2790. That's 806-680-2790. Or call in at 1-800-687-0790. Now, here's Chad Easty.
Good evening, Lubbock, Amarillo, Abilene, Wichita Falls, Midland, Odessa, Dallas, Fort Worth, down in Austin, over in El Paso, and anywhere else. Whether you're listening inside or outside the great state of Texas, wherever you may be on this Wednesday, February 26th, 2025, welcome in to the Chad Easty Show. Glad to have you with us here on the program as we have a great show lined up for you today. A lot to get into, a lot to talk about. We've got a great in-depth interview that we'll be getting to here in just a little bit. And, of course, we'll visit with Scott Braddock coming up at 6:35. We've got updates on statewide news. We've got some national news that we'll be getting into during the show coming up in the next hour. And, of course, we always want to hear from you on any of the day's topics, any of the things that you want to get into. You can text in at 806-680-2790. That's 806-680-2790. A beautiful day across the Lone Star State as we have temperatures right now in the upper 50s up in the panhandle. Right now, right around 66 degrees or so, 65 in Lubbock. Down into the big country, it's in the 70s. Dallas, right around 80 degrees in the hill country. It's between the upper 70s and low 80s. Just a great, gorgeous day outside in Texas, which a lot of people will enjoy. A lot of people enjoying the evening hours as we have a lot more light towards the end of the day, where we're getting closer to the when we spring ahead for an hour and we have more daylight at the end of the day. We're already seeing that as we, when we left yesterday, had some nice still a little bit of light outside when we left. That was that's always nice when you leave at 7, about 7:15 in the evening. So a little bit of light out there. Again, a lot to talk about today. Want to hear from you on the text line. Anything you want to sound off on, feel free to text in at 806-680-2790. You can also give us a call at 1-800-687-0790. That's 1-800-687-0790. The first voice you hear from when you dial in today. Nick, how are you?
Doing well. You know, you mentioned it's a beautiful string of days here.
Yes.
But, you know, you may not have known this. Tomorrow is, it's either national or no national, but it's retro day.
Retro day.
Retro day tomorrow. And every time I hear the word retro,
yeah,
I get transported back to, you know, since I'm so, I have so many years to reflect upon.
Yeah.
When I used to play the Atari as a kid.
Okay. And
that was one of my best childhood memories, is playing the Atari. Just all those old, Dig Dug was my favorite.
Right.
You know, it's just, that to me, that's retro.
Yeah. I did not know that tomorrow's retro day. So we may play around with that tomorrow and have, have a retro topic tomorrow. We may look at that. So, yeah, put that in the back of your mind. I had no idea that we're coming up on the retro day that we'll have tomorrow. Let's see, just a couple of quick headlines to get to real quick before we take our first break. I did, one of the funny topics, you still have people who were upset about Doge, very upset about Doge. It's still out there and upsetting quite a few people on the left. But the Trump administration telling people to some of the different departments to get ready for mass layoffs this spring, to get ready for mass government layoffs coming up this spring, not in every part of the government, not in every department, but in many departments, like the EPA may lay off about 65 or up to like 65% of its workforce. And the administration basically telling the different departments, we're in debt. We're bloated. We're a bloated government. We're a government that is very much in debt, and it's time to cut back a little bit on some of these positions. And so there is that I'm sure we'll see a lot of complaining about, and maybe even some lawsuits, as some of these groups are going and trying to file lawsuits to stop the either Doge or any of the spending, stoppages in spending from actually happening. They're appealing to the courts. And then the Washington Post, this is something we'll get to in the next hour. Jeff Bezos overhauling the outlet's opinion page. And they're wanting a little bit more focus on the free markets in the Washington Post. So that's something we'll be talking about coming up in the next hour, as more and more of the crazy left leaving the Washington Post and saying goodbye because of this. The top editor stepping down from the Washington Post after Jeff Bezos announcing major changes to the opinion page, including the opinion section editor, who said that they were stepping down. Bezos saying that he wanted to see different writing every day in support and in defense of two pillars: personal liberties and free markets. And imagine being so mad that you hear that the editor of the paper or the owner of the paper wants you to focus on personal liberties and free markets. And that's not the only thing you have to focus on, but just there should be at least an opinion every day about personal freedom, about free markets in the paper, and you have people quitting over that. Really does expose just how far gone the Washington Post has been, but they've allowed it to go that way for such a long time. And so it'll be interesting to see exactly how the Washington Post actually moves towards these changes, if and when they do, in defense of personal freedom and free markets. Jeff Bezos putting on X that they will cover other topics as well. He said, but viewpoints opposing those pillars will be left to be published by others. He said there was a time when a newspaper, especially one that was a local monopoly, might have seen it as a service to bring to the readers' doorstep every morning a broad-based opinion section that sought to cover all views. Today, the internet does that job. I am of America and for America and proud to be so. Uh-oh. Our country did not get here from being typical, and a big part of America's success has been freedom in the economic realm and everywhere else. So, yeah, we'll be getting to that in the next hour of the program. When we come back, the in-depth interview today, we're going to be going out to Buffalo Gap. That's right, Buffalo Gap in the big country, right outside of Abilene. And we're going to visit with Tom and Lisa Perini, a Perini Ranch. Perini Ranch, which has been in business for over 40 years, one of the steakhouses, not only of the big country, but of the state of Texas as well. And we're going to find out their life story, the story of Perini Ranch, and maybe some interesting stuff, too, that you may not have known about. And they even have a podcast now. Perini Ranch, they even have a podcast. So we're going to be talking about that as well in the future of not only the restaurant industry, but the beef industry and so much more. And we're going to visit with them when we come back here on the Chad Easty Show. We'll go in depth with Tom and Lisa Perini of Perini Ranch. We'll be right back.
The Chad Easty Show can be heard all over West Texas, weekdays from 5 to 7 p.m. Tune into News Talk 95.1 and 790 KFYO in Lubbock, News Talk 940 in Amarillo, News Talk 94.7 and 1470 KYYW in Abilene, and in Wichita Falls on News Talk 96.3 and 1290. The Chad Easty Show. Make it a part of your drive home. Weekdays from 5 to 7 p.m.
Get ready, Basin Red Dirt Barbecue and Music Festival brought to you by Big E Services is heading to the Scarborough Sports Center in Midland on April 26th. Savor the best barbecue in Texas from top pitmasters. Enjoy ice-cold drinks and shop local vendors. Then cap it off with incredible live music from Casey Donahue, Pecos and the Rooftops, and more. It's barbecue, music, and good vibes all day long. Don't miss out. Tickets are on sale now at RedDirtBBQBasin.com. That's RedDirtBBQBasin.com. Hurry, they're going fast.
All right, welcome back to the Chad Easty Show. We appreciate you tuning in today. And just how we have been every Wednesday, we like to go in depth with interesting people, those who have had success in their industry. And to say that these two have had success, that might be downplaying it, because they've got this wonderful steakhouse, Perini Ranch Steakhouse in Buffalo Gap, which has become one of my favorite. If you ever go, which you should as soon as possible, you're going to fall in love with it as well. It's been honored by numerous publications, and it is really, really a historic steakhouse here in the Lone Star State. And joining us on the phones to talk about not only the steakhouse, but their lives and what led up to the success of Perini Ranch, we have Tom and Lisa Perini of Perini Ranch Steakhouse. And Tom and Lisa, welcome to the show. How are you two this evening?
Well, we are fine, and thank you for having us.
Yes, absolutely. And over 40 years in business with Perini Ranch, Tom, I want to start off with, how did you get to opening up a steakhouse? Because you're just kind of viewing some of your personal history, starting off, you were born in the Fort Worth area, and then you were in real estate, and then all of a sudden, I know your father passed away, and you got the call to go back home. Take us from there. How did things progress from there?
Well, and you've kind of hit the highlights, but, you know, I grew up in Abilene, went to school here, military school, et cetera, ended up in Dallas, and my father passed away in 1965. And my mother called me up and said, I want you to come home. Well, I had two other brothers, and they were in school, and I was kind of having a good time in Dallas. She said, you need to come home. And so I came home. And where we live on the Perini Ranch, but honestly, it's very small. This is the ranch is a section. And my mother sat me down and he said, Tom, this is a small piece of property, but it is your job to retain this for the family. And she said, you can't make any money off of it, but you've got to figure out how to make this work.
No pressure.
And I said, yes. And my mother was very strong, and she was and she knew exactly what she was saying. And at that time, that's exactly what I needed. So from that point on, running a section, you can't run enough gas, but, you know, that just doesn't work. And so a dear friend of mine, Joe Matthews, and our dear friends, and we leased some property up by Stamford, Texas, about 8,000 acres, started buying cattle, and for 18 years raised cattle. And but in that time period, I didn't know any. I mean, I wasn't a cowboy. You know, I knew what cowboys were and et cetera, et cetera. And so, you know, after you kind of went out and got the herd, brought them into the pens and did whatever, I ended up cooking. I had a chuck wagon, and I started cooking on this wagon for lunch for the cowboys. And so this is how it kind of all evolved. But as time went on in this time period, a lot of the large ranches, the Sixes, the Pitchfork, the Matthews, Swinson, all of these large ranches had already retired their chuck wagons and cooked. And so the Pitchfork would call and say, well, they're going to have a big horse sale, and they wanted me to bring the chuck wagon and cowboys and cook for 1,000 people. Well, I would go and we'd cook for 1,000 people, and with this, with a 2-day experience, excuse me. And so I always enjoyed cooking, and I was cooking when the cowboys were really being cowboys.
Right.
So this just, it, you know, and we were doing Texas food. We were doing brisket and all this stuff, lots of big cast iron pots and chuck wagons. And I was a real believer in early Texas food. So that you know, that's kind of how all that started. And but I want to tell you, and I think your listeners will understand this from your area, but being in the agricultural business, whether you're planting cotton or whether you're raising cattle or whatever, is very difficult. It's one of the few jobs that you can do everything right and still lose. If it doesn't rain, if the markets change, whatever. And so you have to really enjoy it and be involved in it and be smart in it. And so it was, you know, 18 years. And, you know, we made it sometime and didn't make it other times. And that's how it all worked. I was very fortunate to be able to work for these big ranches and to be able to get a little cash flow, which is, incidentally, very important whether you're raising cotton, cattle, or selling brisket. It's very important.
Yes.
And so this is how all this started. So my father passed away in 65, and that's when all of this started. But in 1983, I went and talked to a dear friend of mine, Watt Matthews, who ran the Lambshead Ranch in Albany. And I kind of grown up with him. He was a good friend of my father's, and all the Matthews family were dear friends. And so I went to Watt and said, Watt, I cannot make this work. I said, you know, I've done everything right or what I thought was right, but blah, 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 and it went on and on. And he had heard that story before. And he asked me, he said, Mom, do you have any oil income? And I said, no, the family does, but I don't. And he said, I think you ought to sell out. And I went, whoa. I wasn't, okay. That was a little sharp.
Yeah.
And so I said, you know, I don't know if I really want to sell out. I'm just here talking with you. But when all of this stuff was happening, you've got to remember, I've been cooking for Watt for his Fandango things and the Pitchfork, I mean, for years.
Right.
And Watt turned to me and he said, Tom, I said, you know, I really enjoy this. I enjoy being around cowboys. I love agriculture. I love all of that. And he said, Tom, you can do more for the beef industry by cooking it and not raising it. And he was spot on. And so I said, what do I do? And he said, you need to sell out. Well, that was kind of a painful moment. But we did that. And then I came back to Buffalo Gap. And we had kind of an old barn on the ranch, kind of off the highway. No one could see it. And I thought, well, I'm going to open a restaurant or something. I had no more clue about doing this than, I mean, it was just I just kind of got into it.
Yeah.
But this process took a long time. So I'm a beef person, and we're raising good beef, and I don't mean raising, but I know how to buy it. You know how to do it. And for the beef industry, this is 100%. I mean, this is what we enjoy doing. And so I started, I'd have beef shipped in, and we started this steakhouse deal, and it started to grow, but it took years to do. I laugh because, when you first opened the steakhouse, I had hired a couple of waitresses, and I didn't know that they needed to be paid every week.
They let you know real quick that they needed to, right?
But, they said they wanted money that way. We had only had 15 people in it.
Well,
I was very fortunate that my mother believed in what I was doing. And I go to mother and I said, Mother, I've got to have $500 or $1,000. And she'd write me a check and do it.
Yeah.
And if you go back, mothers know best. She knew exactly what I should do.
Hey, Tom, we need to take a break. When we come back, we're going to continue this discussion. Tom and Lisa Perini joining us with Perini Ranch Steakhouse here on the Chad HD Show. We'll be right back.
Call in to the Chad Hasty Show at 1-800-687-0790. The Chad Hasty Show, broadcasting on the Texas Town Square Media Network.
Hey, low water crossing. Stop the car.
Nah, I'm going to drive right through it.
Oh, not with me, you're not.
In Texas, low water crossings fill up fast. Your vehicle can be swept away in 2 feet of water.
Let's just turn around and go a different way.
And be late for the party? No, I'm driving across it. What are you doing?
I'm getting out.
Wait. Hey, I've got an idea. How about we turn around, go a different way, and be late for the party?
You are so smart.
Turn around. Don't drown. A message from TxDOT.
Ever tried balancing a dozen eggs in one hand while hopping on one foot? Or maybe juggling cats while riding the unicycle? Sounds ridiculous, right? But guess what? That's exactly what texting while driving is like. Your human brain only has the capacity to focus on one thing at a time. So when you're behind the wheel, give driving your undivided attention.
Don't drive distracted. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
News and talk of West Texas. News Talk 95.1 and 790 KFYO.
Don't forget about Chad. Find Chad on social media at Chad Hasty Radio on X and Instagram. It's the Chad Hasty Show.
Back on the Chad Hasty Show. Thank you very much for tuning in today, whether you're listening in Lubbock, Amarillo, Abilene, Wichita Falls, and beyond. We welcome you into the program today. Don't forget, you have the Chad Hasty Show podcast available for you to listen to. Just to subscribe and follow wherever you get your favorite podcast. Today we're going in depth with Tom Perini with Perini Ranch Steakhouse, and we've gone from the chuck wagon days to the opening of Perini Ranch Steakhouse back in 1983. Is that right, Tom? Is that when it opened?
Yes.
When you opened the steakhouse, and you said you were brand new getting into that. I mean, you were not a restaurateur. You were someone brand new getting into opening a restaurant, and you opened up a steakhouse in Buffalo Gap, which is not a large metropolis whatsoever. I mean, it's like a perfect Texas place for a steakhouse. When you're going to it, when you're pulling up, I mean, it's quintessential Texas steakhouse. But when you opened it, I mean, what were your feelings when opening up a steakhouse in Buffalo Gap and going, okay, how many people are going to fill this place up?
And the word fill up came a long time. But so, And really, I mean, I'd cooked for cowboys and I'd done all this stuff, and I felt very comfortable about doing that. But the steakhouse business, I really did not know. But when Watt said that I needed to be involved in cooking beef, then that's what I did. I talked to my mother, and she said she'd help me. And so we converted this old barn into a kind of a steakhouse. And, you know, the bad thing is, right now, if you're going to open a business, you go to you're on a corner in a big city, you know, with all the traffic and whatever. I was out in Buffalo, Texas. You couldn't even see this building from the highway.
You can't, no.
No. And so, you know, I'm just flying dumb. But we started doing this and cooking steaks and doing this. And this was a long process. This is not a 2-year deal. It went for a long time, borrowed a lot of money from my mother, but she was very supportive. And so, but this is how this all evolved. And so the interesting thing was, in 95, we got a call from the James Beard House in New York City. Now, remember, I've been in a little cook shack in Buffalo Gap, a little house that you can't see.
The James Beard Foundation's a big, big deal for those who don't know. It's a big deal.
Oh, my God. I had no idea. I said, who is this James Beard? They said, Tom, just talk to him. Talk to him. So I called him back. I'd been in Mexico cooking for the Beef Council. I used to go all over. We've cooked all over from promoting USB. And so I just come back. Here's this somebody wanted to talk to me from this James Beard. Of course, I had an idea who it was because I'd been working with the Restaurant Association. And so I called them. They said they wanted us to come up and cook. And I said, that's fine. Very, very flattered. We didn't have any stars. We didn't have any awards. We didn't have anything. And so I called a friend of mine who's in the real estate business. And I said, I've checked and, you know, for us to go to New York and cook cost about $10,000.
Wow.
Well, let me tell you something. In those days, that was kind of big stuff. And I talked to my friend, and he was very nice. And he said, Tom, if we can send some of these tenderloins out. I was cooking some tenderloins in the backyard. I didn't even have them on the menu. I didn't anything. He said, if we can send some tenderloins out, and if we can get some stories, it can warrant that $10,000 expenditure.
Huh.
And that's what we did. We sent out about 20 tenderloins, and they were in beautiful paper, and we sent out, and we had all kinds of response from the big boys. But the real big boys came back in and said they wanted another tenderloin.
Yeah.
And that was the New York Times. And so they wanted another tenderloin. And so I sent them another tenderloin. I'm in the ranch cook shack. The dogs are barking. The train's going by. And I get a call from a fax checker from the New York Times. When I look, I thought he meant a fax machine checker. I thought, what in the hoop? My machine's fine. And he said, no. And we talked for a minute. And he said, Mr. Perini, I want you to call tomorrow. I want you today. He said, do you have a 1-800 number? I said, no. And I mean, the dogs are barking and all this. And he said, I want you to call and get one and call me back. And so I said, all right. I went and called our little Taylor telephone co-op. And they gave me and I called the guy back. And the next morning, about 4 o'clock in the morning, a friend of mine that I'm going to school with called me up, and this girl said, Tom, have you seen the New York Times? It takes 2 weeks to get it here now. And I said, no, I haven't seen the New York Times. And we had won the mail order gift of the year for the New York Times.
Wow.
Well, wow. That word, I'm just telling you, I was blown away. There were 2,000 entries. And we won the mail order gift of the year from the New York Times. And so all of a sudden, as the sun came up in the east and set in the west, I'm getting all these telephone calls. I did not have a mail order company. So at this point is when we started trying to develop this company. Because, I mean, I was cooking these and sending them out. I didn't have them. But during this time period is when I met Lisa. And then so we were dating, and all of this was fine. It was a tremendous help. We kept doing this, and we finally found a place that we could cook and sell coins. And so, you know, the rest of this is history now, because we sell thousands of them every year.
Yeah.
And so I'm gonna say something. And I think this is very important. When opportunity knocks, you've got a choice. And the choice is to say, yes, I'm going to try, or no, I can't do it. And that yes, I'm going to try it has been the exact way we have built all of our companies. So in a minute, when you talk to Lisa, you're going to be unbelievable. All the stuff that we're doing and how we're doing beef and how we're handling that, she has taken this to the next step up. But that is very important. So I talk to people and they go, well, I don't know. And I said, you know, if you don't want to do it, don't. But if you really want to try to do it, you just need to pull it all together and do it. And for us, in everything we have done since those early days, when things come up and we say, are we? And we go, yes. And so we have made all of those things work, but you have got to be prepared to do it and not be afraid.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, before we take our next break, and we need to do that here in the next about 2 minutes or so, tell the story when Perini Ranch went to the White House on 9/11, and you were there at the White House, correct, on 9/11?
Yeah. I will do that. Now.
Yeah.
Good. Okay. I thought you meant wait. So in this time period, you know, in 2000, I mean, we were working with the Governor Bush, and when he became president, we were cooking for Governor Bush, and when he became president, it was, oh my God. Well, I thought, God, someday maybe we can go to the White House. And we went up, and I'll be honest with you, we drove around, and I went back and see if I could get a chuck wagon through the back gate and all this stuff. But, you know, the day happened, and we got a call. My wife took the call, and it had to be on a private line. When you're cooking for the President of the United States, it's not casual.
Right.
And so we worked on this policy, and I mean, how we did it, how we were, whatever. We were invited to Washington by the President at the White House, and we discussed all of this and how important it was. And the President wanted real Texas food. And so when we went into this meeting, Oval table and 30 other people, and the chef came in and said, you know, talk about what do you want to fix? And I said, we're going to fix tenderloin, we're going to do whatever. He said, you know, you're in Washington, you've got to fix chicken. And I said, no, sir, I'm not fixing chicken. I said, the President likes our tenderloin, and I'm fixing tenderloin. And the room went deathly quiet. And I thought, well, we just better go back to Buffalo Gap because this little deal's over. And we ended up staying in Washington that evening and had dinner with the President, First Lady, and some guests. And so then we're with Mrs. Bush, we were talking about it. And the chef came up and said, you know, I think that tenderloin deal is a great idea. So I think there was a phone call from Mrs. Bush to the chef. And I think there was something that happened on the backside. And so, you know, we fixed real food. I mean, we did tenderloin, and I mean, I don't mean no beans, but we had green chili hominy. We had all these things that they loved, and bread pudding. And that's exactly what we were going to do. And so the date was set. And so we came back to Texas, and then we came back, and it so happened we set all of our equipment up on the South Lawn, and we did all this stuff. You know, we were prepared to serve 1,500 people.
Right.
And the next day was 9/11.
Mm.
And so I'm in the hotel. Lisa's getting dressed. I look at the plane, at the towers.
On TV.
And so I came into, she was in the red bathroom, and I said, Lisa, we're not doing this party.
Yeah.
And so we had a crew. You know, I'm going to tell you, we had 10 cowboys. At the White House, they said, you know, we have cowboys, and we'll buy them hats, and they look like cowboys. And I said, no, 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 no. You don't understand. I said, if we have any cowboys come up, they're going to be real cowboys. So we had people from the Pitchfork and the Matthews and all these guys that had never been out of the county. And so they knew how to take a hat off when a woman approached and say, yes, ma'am.
Right.
And this was the real McCoy. And so we had all these boys, we had all these things. Now the plane hitting the tower, and we said, we've got problems. And the White House called, and you know, they said, yeah, you know, the party's canceled, and they wanted to have all of the food went to the firemen and Secret Service. And,
good.
You know, all of this.
Tom, we got to take the break real quick. When we come back, let's visit with Lisa Perini when we come back here on the Chad Easty Show. We're visiting with Tom and Lisa Perini of Perini Ranch Steakhouse.
The Titan of Texas Talk Radio, The Chad Easty Show.
Talking with newsmakers and about the issues that matter to you. The Chad Easty Show, weekdays from 5 to 7 p.m. Chad's show is also digital with The Chad Easty Show podcast. The Chad Easty Show podcast can be downloaded on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Spotify, and the Radio On Demand page on KFYO.com. The Chad Easty Show, all across Texas during your drive home, weekdays from 5 to 7 p.m.
Get ready, Basement Red Dirt Barbecue and Music Festival brought to you by Big E Services is heading to the Scarborough Sports Center in Midland on April 26th. Savor the best barbecue in Texas from top pitmasters. Enjoy ice-cold drinks and shop local vendors. Then cap it off with incredible live music from Casey Donahue, Pecos and the Rooftops, and more. It's barbecue, music, and good vibes all day long. Don't miss out. Tickets are on sale now at RedDirtBBQBasin.com. That's RedDirtBBQBasin.com. Hurry, they're going fast.
Back on the Chad Easty Show. By the way, if you're wondering, when I go out to Perini Ranch Steakhouse, we're starting with the fried quail legs, and then either the ribeye or, of course, the prime rib is what we're going with. We're visiting with Tom and Lisa Perini of Perini Ranch Steakhouse. Tom, thank you again for joining us. And I know you wanted to mention a couple more things.
I want to say one thing. Behind every successful man is a good woman. And Lisa, we dated, we got married, and she's running the business. And she has moved it to a different level than I ever could have. And so this is very exciting for me. So here's Lisa. I want you to talk to her.
Hey, Lisa. Welcome. Well, we've got about 2 minutes, Lisa. And we're going to have you guys back on in the future. But tell us what's new about Perini Ranch and what's to come.
Well, there's been a lot of growth at Perini Ranch. It's been a lot of fun. As you can tell, Tom's busy entertaining everybody. And we're watching a bobcat walk by our window. I'm sorry. wow, that's amazing. We're sitting on our back porch, and there he goes. Sorry. So the steakhouse has been just the hub of our business and had such a great run for so long. But we love being a destination restaurant, and so many people come here from all over the country to visit the steakhouse and to experience Buffalo Gap and the area. So we have lodging here on the ranch. We have a retail store, Perini Ranch Market, that's all about everything hospitality, entertaining and hospitality. We have a mail order business that Tom touched on with our mesquite smoked peppered beef tenderloin and a line of mail order steaks. We have hot off the press and breaking news. We haven't told anybody. We have a couple of new cookbooks coming out in the next 12 months.
Nice.
We're working with a big publisher on some new projects there, which is very fun. And we just love our jobs and love our life, and we love working together, and we get to meet a lot of really fabulous, interesting, fascinating people, and we get to make dinner for them and see them have great experiences around the table, and that's what's important to us.
Well, Tom and Lisa Perini, it's a pleasure coming and visiting y'all each and every time we have. It's been a pleasure having you here on the show.
The Chad Hastie Show, a presentation of Texas Town Square Media Network. The views and opinions expressed during the Chad Hastie Show are not necessarily the views of this station's staff, management, advertisers, or Town Square Media. Broadcasting from the great state of Texas, news and views with a Lone Star perspective. You can sound off during the show by sending Chad a text at 806-680-2790. That's 806-680-2790. Or call in at 1-800-687-0790. Now, here's Chad Hastie.
All right, welcome back to the Chad Hastie Show here on this Wednesday. Scott Braddock will join the program at 6:35. Thanks again to Tom and Lisa Perini of Perini Ranch Steakhouse there in Buffalo Gap. It truly is, I mean, just an amazing story. You have this steakhouse and Buffalo Gap, population of about, 500 people? And it makes it big. And they've been in business for well over, 40 years now and have seen all kinds of success, not only with the restaurant, but with their mail order business and just advocating for U.S. beef around the nation, around the world. And then now they got a podcast and all kinds of great stuff. Cookbooks coming out. Yeah, they said they got a couple of cookbooks that'll be coming out this year. So that'll be something good as well. And just thanks to them and congratulations to them for all the success that they have had. And it's a very, very, very good place to stop if you're ever in the Abilene and Buffalo Gap area. Highly recommend that you stop by Perini Ranch. Let's see, Barry in Wichita Falls. Good afternoon. Great interview, just so the audience knows, and I know you already know, but this James Beard Award is the Academy Award of Cooking. As you said, it's a big deal. And from Barry in Wichita Falls. 806-680-2790. That's 806-680-2790. The prime rib one year made the list of like Oprah's favorite things for Christmas. I mean, just, again, it's like this, small steakhouse in Buffalo Gap, and you got Oprah promoting them, and their cheeseburgers made one of the best burgers in the nation out of the Today Show, I think it was, years ago. So, I mean, just, man. All the success and accolades that they have had. Much deserved, that's for sure. 806-680-2790. That's 806-680-2790. You can text in, sound off on any of the topics that you'd like to get into. We'll probably get into this a little bit further with Scott Braddock coming up at 6:35, but the majority of Texas House signing on to support the school choice bill that's in at least the House version of the school choice bill. 75 co-sponsors plus the bill's author would provide enough votes to pass Governor Abbott's top priority in the 150-seat House. A narrow majority of the Texas House has already signed on in support of the chamber's school voucher bill on Wednesday, signaling that Governor Abbott's top priority is on track to clear the lower chamber. Days after Representative Brad Buckley filed House Bill 3, the chamber's plan for letting families use tax funds for the children's private schooling, 75 Republican members enlisted as co-authors on the measure. The 76 votes, including Buckley, would be just enough to form a majority of the 150-seat House if each member supports the final version of the bill, which, you know, there's still a little bit of ways from that happening, but they're close. Speaker Dustin Burroughs did not sign on as co-author, but the Lubbock Republican has signaled support for the school choice bill, and he could provide an extra vote of breathing room for proponents. Speakers rarely vote on legislation, but occasionally make an exception for key votes or break ties. Lawmakers in both chambers of the legislature routinely sign up as co-authors when they want to publicly show their support for a bill or resolution. Buckley, who chairs the House Public Education Committee, filed House Bill 3 last week, along with a slate of education bills that would collectively increase public school funding and rework the state's discipline and accountability standards. Though HB 3 is now supported by a majority of the House, the measure will likely evolve as lawmakers iron out differences with the Senate, which passed its own plan back in February to create a voucher-like education savings account. Dade Phelan, one of 11 House Republicans other than Buckley or Burroughs, who did not sign on as a co-author, said he remains undecided in part because he expects a lot to change in HB 3. Said it's a very complex bill with a lot of moving parts. Phelan added that he wants to hear more input from his district and how they want him to represent them. Now, over the weekend, you had Brian Harrison, who's a state rep who has been awfully vocal on X, saying that that this universal school choice is not truly universal because it only would allow about 100,000 students to be a part of it, which is true. But as lawmakers have said in the past, what universal does not mean universal as in every kid is going to be covered. It means every child can apply. Universal does not mean every student is going to have an education savings account once this thing is passed, which I think Republicans do run into a potential problem of overselling this to people who are 100% in favor of ESAs. Those who expect maybe next year for their student, their child, to have an education savings account open for them may be surprised when they learn that only 100,000 students will actually be covered by this. Something to remember, though, is that this would be the most money put towards school choice in year one that any state has ever put money towards it. And I asked Harrison on social media if he was going to offer an amendment to put more money towards school choice, and he denied answer. He answered on another question, but he did not answer on whether or not he would actually be offering an amendment to increase the funding for school choice. And he has not signed on as a co-author. Other conservatives have signed on as co-authors of this. A lot of Republicans have signed on to this bill. There will be politics at play. There will be things done behind closed doors. Agreements made. There will be amendments made to this bill. And then once it's passed, and I believe it will pass, you'll see the House and the Senate iron out their differences and come out with a bill that they believe can get to the governor's desk. 806-680-2790. That's 806-680-2790. The first death in West Texas due to the outbreak of measles. More than 120 people across nine counties have been infected during the largest outbreak of measles in Texas in the last 30 years. A school-aged child has died in Lubbock from measles, the first death reported in an ongoing outbreak that has infected more than 120 people in West Texas since January. According to state officials, the child who was unvaccinated was hospitalized in Lubbock last week. Doesn't say if the child was actually from Lubbock or, you know, maybe one of the other counties. Gaines County has been the main county that has had this outbreak of measles. State and local officials would not say whether the child lived in Lubbock, where the child was infected with measles. The AP first reported the death on Wednesday. The last measles death in Texas was back in 2018, involving a 10-year-old living in North Texas. The outbreak, the largest in the state in 30 years. The first cases reported in late January in Gaines County. Since then, the outbreak has spread to nine other counties in West Texas at the Panhandle. As of Tuesday, the state health department has reported 124 confirmed cases of measles. The vast majority of them in Gaines County, where a large unvaccinated Mennonite community resides. The agency is working with local health departments as to investigate cases and provide vaccinations and immunizations where needed. But I mean, if you're the Mennonite community, at least many of those in Gaines County, they don't believe in vaccinations. So they're probably not going to get an immunizations. Unrelated to the West Texas outbreak, one case reported Wednesday from the Dallas area in Rockwall County. State health officials say that case involved an adult who recently traveled outside the U.S. Houston has reported two separate cases. They did that back in January. The state agency working with local health departments to investigate cases and provide shots where needed. So that's just the latest in the measles outbreak in West Texas. 806-680-2790. We'll be right back.
The Chad Hastie Show can be heard all over West Texas. Weekdays from 5 to 7 p.m. Tune in to News Talk 95.1 and 790 KFYO in Lubbock. News Talk 940 in Amarillo. News Talk 94.7 and 1470 KYYW in Abilene. And in Wichita Falls on News Talk 96.3 and 1290. The Chad Hastie Show. Make it a part of your drive home. Weekdays from 5 to 7 p.m.
Hear that? That's the sound of your life. Perfectly imperfect. Beating in rhythm to the world you've created. But every time you drive after drinking, the music gets drowned out. Your life sounds pretty great. Don't let a buzz ruin it. Buzz driving is drunk driving. Don't drive buzzed. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
on the Chad Hasty Show. Hey, don't forget to swing by and see my friends over at Eddins Furniture, 1415 19th Street. Ask about the Chad Hasty Show special. You get a great deal on a great piece of furniture where you're going to save a ton of money. Just check out some of the other great specials that they have right now at Eddins Furniture, 1415 19th Street, right there in downtown Lubbock, Texas. Where, yeah, there's a little construction on 19th Street, but it's still easy to get to Eddins Furniture and worth it when you save so much money. All you need to do is mention you heard about them on the Chad Hasty Show and you're looking for a great deal. They still got that great deal on a recliner right now as well, where you're going to save a ton of money. All right, let's see here. We've got the anti-Trump resistance. Yes. Yes, the anti-Trump resistance begins to wake in earnest. This is out of the Washington Post. Rowdy crowds are showing up at lawmakers' town hall meetings to protest Trump's actions. Some people are launching into chants, such as "No King," or shouting down Republicans and House members. Senator Bernie Sanders drawing overflow crowds of his own as he sets to mobilize voters against Trump's budget cuts. At the same time, a coalition of Democrat state attorney general methodically filing lawsuits against Trump's orders in six out of seven cases that's been successful in persuading judges to halt them. The Democrat Congressional Campaign Committee, the Democrat Governors Association, and liberal groups seeing a surge in fundraising, and Democrat members of Congress are seizing on a budget clash as an opportunity to coalesce around the president's plans. Little by little, an initial phase of stunned confusion, the broader resistance to Trump is beginning to wake up. Amazing how they never wrote this about Joe Biden and the resistance to Joe. No. Now we're seeing the resistance to Trump. Even though when you look at polling data, the polling data says the American people, by and large, are still with Trump. Quote, there's a lot of anger building, such as we're seeing in deep red Republican-held districts. People are coming out. They're surprising those Republican members of Congress that don't expect it when they try to defend Elon Musk and they get aggressively booed. You couldn't manufacture this if you tried. Oh, but they are manufacturing this, folks. They absolutely are manufacturing this on the left. This is an absolute scam, what they're doing with these anti-Doge town halls. Story out of Breitbart yesterday. Media outlets have labeled protests against Elon Musk's Department of Government Efficiency as proof that voters are against it, but there's reportedly more to the story, according to the Washington Free Beacon. The outlet cited a recent town hall event with Representative Rich McCormick, Republican out of Georgia. His deep red district. Some media outlets claiming the meeting showed voters are against Doge, which has been working to help cut wasteful government spending. Video footage appears to show the moment the town hall meeting became heated as McCormick tried to answer attendees' questions. The Beacon named the New York Times, the Washington Post, and CBS as outlets who pointed to McCormick's town hall and claimed that it shows a bipartisan backlash against Doge. The article said CBS featured a quote from the organizer of the protest describing her as only one of the congressman's constituents. The Beacon detailed further information pertaining to the organizer, identified as Maggie Goldman, saying that she does live in McCormick's district, but added more of her background. A self-described Democrat and political activist, Goldman, who did not respond to a request for comment, coordinated volunteers for Pete Buttigieg's presidential campaign in 2019 and 2020, according to her LinkedIn account. Shortly thereafter, she ran for her local county commission as a Democrat, seeking to enact more inclusive policy projects. Goldman has donated exclusively to Democrats and sent Kamala Harris's campaign more than $1,500 last year. The Beacon also reported similar protests that have happened in other House GOP town halls and district meetings, noting the demonstrations drove mainstream media coverage, brewing backlash against Trump. They were all well-funded liberal organizations organized many of these town halls. So again, the backlash that you're seeing playing out in the national news media, all of this is being organized, and they're bringing in folks from liberal activist groups to throw a fit in deep red counties, deep red cities, deep red districts to make you think and to make the news media report that, oh, there's a backlash. Oh, MAGA is real mad. MAGA is not happy with Trump. MAGA is getting upset with Elon Musk. The Washington Free Beacon noted that the George Soros-funded group Indivisible and Move On were at the center of the demonstrations that took place. In a social media post back on February 18th, McCormick advised or advertised the town hall in Roswell. Quote, this is an opportunity for you to come and ask questions. I'll gladly answer them. I'll look forward to seeing you there. More video footage of the town hall caught the moment when a woman asked McCormick what he intends to do about reining in the megalomaniac in the White House. Further into the clip, some of the people gathered heckled McCormick as he tried to respond. So again, everything that we're seeing, all of this, this is all manufactured. The left, they have no leader other than, Jasmine Crockett, who's insane. They have no leadership. They have nothing to stand on. They don't really even have the will of the people, even the Democrats, behind them at this point. The Democrats are still a mess. And they still want to promote the same tired things that they lost on back in the election. And now they're trying to convince the news media, well, the news media is trying to convince you that people are tired of Elon Musk, that people are tired of what Trump is doing. And when you actually look at the polls and you dig into the polling data, it's not true at all. When we come back, take a look at what's happening throughout the state government and the politics there when we return on the Chad Hastie Show.
The Chad Hastie Show, weekdays 5 to 7 p.m. Sound off during the show by sending Chad a text at 806-680-2790.
Some people won't give you the real talk on drugs, but it's time we know the facts. Fentanyl is often laced into illicit drugs and used to make fake versions of prescription pills. You can't see it, taste it, or smell it. Suppliers mix fentanyl into their products because it's potent and cheap, and the dealer might not even know. Keep yourself and others safe by knowing the real deal on fentanyl. Get the facts. Go to realdealonfentanyl.com. This message is brought to you by the Ad Council.
Heads up, Texas.
So you don't hit my car when I'm sitting at a stoplight.
Heads up, Texas.
So I can ride my bike safely.
Heads up, Texas.
So I can make it across the street without getting run over.
Heads up, Texas.
So I don't have to write you a ticket.
Heads up, Texas, because driving and using your phone is a bad combination. Talk, text, crash. Brought to you by TxDOT.
The news and talk of West Texas. News Talk 95.1 and 790 KFYO.
Don't forget about Chad. Find Chad on social media at Chad Hastie Radio on X and Instagram. It's the Chad Hastie Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, I don't know if... Sometimes I just have questions about Nick. He puts that we have our next guest. He puts it... Is that how you think senor is spelt? Or
are you just having fun?
I need to
explain myself. I spelt it phonetically because either I am not smart enough to find the fancy accent mark. I put senor because I'm a funny guy. So I put senor in there, but I spelled it phonetically. So it looks a little funny. That's the joke.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Okay.
I know how to spell it.
All right. I'm just making sure. Yeah. I'm just making sure. All right. Well, let's go to... Let's bring him on. It's Scott Braddock, our good friend over at QuorumReport.com. Senor Braddock. I think that's what he was meaning to say.
I could only hear part of that while I was on hold, Chad, and that's what I was going to ask you. Is he calling me Senor Braddock? I am a senior journalist, so let's do this.
I mean, I think he's trying to.
I didn't work this long at it to not be called senior.
Yeah, he's trying. He's trying. We've got a lot going on. It's the legislative session. It continues to churn. Not chub yet, but churn. What's happening.
A whole different thing.
Yes. That's for later. But I can't wait to see what Harrison puts in. So we've got churning going on right now, but we also have making Texas healthy again. What's up with that?
Yeah, you see this? This is from Senator Lois Kolkhorst out of the Brenham area, where I spent some of my formative years growing up in Washington County. Senator Kolkhorst is pushing forward with a plan that is, it's echoing what is happening at the national level with President Trump and his pick of, RFK. We're trying to push to make people healthy again. When you watch the coverage of this nationally, it's interesting that for all of the questions about, the choice that Trump made, to basically lead the nation's health policy, there are doctors that they'll put on CNN or ABC, CBS, whatever, and they'll say, we do have some disagreements, but there are some things he's saying that make sense. And in fact, some things that Michelle Obama would have said that Republicans attacked the Obamas for at the time. Remember that? And so you look at some of it, and I do think there are interesting moments of bipartisan agreement that we should say, hey, Chad, not everything has to be the most divisive thing in the history of the world. Maybe kids shouldn't be eating these ultra-processed foods. Maybe the kids shouldn't be eating these things that have all the additives in them and the different chemicals. Look, I grew up on the farm in Wharton County and then in Washington County. And, we milked our own cows. Like, folks out in Lubbock, eating stuff that you grew yourself.
Yeah.
That's how I grew up. I know that's not everybody's experience. But we grew up with the sort of the rule that if you couldn't pronounce the ingredient, maybe you shouldn't be eating it, right? And so I think it's two pieces of legislation that are what I will call common sense. Senate Bill 25. Would expand the amount of time that students in public schools have to spend in PE class. It would not allow the students, to be restricted from PE, even if they have some disciplinary issue going on. I remember, you can imagine, Chad, I got in trouble now and again in school. And when you were in what they call, do they still do this, in-school suspension?
I think they do, yeah.
Those kids just go in a room and they never get the PE. This would say that they still have to get PE if they're, being disciplined. It also would require nutrition education for physicians and medical students. It would establish an advisory council to study connections between processed foods and chronic diseases. And it would also require that there be new label warnings if a product has ingredients that are banned by Canada, the European Union, or the United Kingdom. I could imagine Democrats pushing for something like this, Chad, and the other bill that Democrats are mostly in agreement for, from the discussion I've seen on this so far. They had a hearing about it. The other bill, and that's, by the way, the first one is the one that Senator Kolkhorst filed. And the other one, Senate Bill 314, this is all, some of the stuff that Lieutenant Governor Patrick has prioritized as some of the, the big bills the Senate's going to do. This other one, I believe from Senator Hughes out of East Texas, it would prohibit certain chemicals and dyes from being included in free and reduced school lunches. Now, on that second piece of legislation. There was some concern. I heard this primarily from a Democrat from Houston, a guy named Boris Miles, one of the senators out of Harris County. But there were some Republicans who were agreeing with him when he was saying this. And Senator Colquhoust, Senator Houston, didn't necessarily disagree. They said, look, we got to work out the details on this because in some urban school districts and in some rural school districts, some of the districts I can imagine are in your listening area, they might have some issue coming into compliance with that second requirement that when you're talking about the free and reduced school lunches, that you might be setting up a situation where some of those school districts might not be able to comply with it immediately, which would mean some kids would not get the only hot meal that they get all day. And so I do think there's probably, some incentive and some agreement within the Senate with Republicans and Democrats to try to work out that language and figure out exactly how it's going to work. But look, I think in a broad sense of that, at 30,000 foot level on this, we do have to have a real conversation, and people are having it all across the country, as far as why we don't address our health issues on the front end instead of the back end, right? We're putting so much junk in our bodies that people are sick, and people are having to take pills to manage the the sickness that goes along with eating the stuff that we're eating in the first place. And so I think that's a positive thing that, I would have hoped that, Republicans would have maybe agreed with Michelle Obama about, and I would hope that maybe Democrats would agree, with the Trump administration about. Now, the devil lives in the details to figure out how to do this. But I do think it's something that's front and center. It's on the minds of a lot of parents that I've talked to across the whole state.
Yeah. Well, and then I think, for at least a couple of years ago, you would have had the argument on the right of, well, you can't tell us what we can and can't have to eat. And, right. and that type of argument is, I've seen it brought up in a few different mm-hmm. spaces, but it's kind of dissolved a little bit, far as mm-hmm. as like a hard stopping point. It's
a big pushback.
Yeah. It kind of seems like okay, everyone's on board with this. Let's find out what's really in our food type of deal.
And look, where I've always been on this stuff is just tell me what's in the food, right? I mean, look, let's at least have, and this is part of what they're talking about, let's at least have truth in labeling so that I can make a decision. I mean, yes, I want there to be free market choices that are made by consumers, but just tell us what's in it. How can you make an informed choice as a consumer in a free market if you don't even know what's in the food? So, some of that has to be addressed. Some of that is in this. And I think, again, this is one of those points where as long as they don't make it this is where we kind of run into the danger with some of the, ultra partisan and tribal politics that we have. As long as it doesn't have to just be a Trump thing, and it can be that, hey, we're all doing this because we want the kids to be healthier, as children, and to grow, into healthy adults. If we all kind of agree on that, then maybe we can come up with something that works here.
Let's see. Beyond that, we still have that old school choice issue that's being talked about. And today, I don't know if he's actually declaring victory, but he's at least mm-hmm. saying we're getting pretty close.
The chairman of the Public Education Committee in the House, Brad Buckley, did unveil a list of 75 co-authors for his school choice school voucher bill, which is House Bill 3. And there are some holdouts on this, of course, within the Republican Party, as we would expect, right? This has been divisive within the Republican Party and conservative politics writ large. But if you think about the numbers in the House, if there are 75 co-authors on the bill, plus the chairman himself who filed the bill, plus the speaker, Dustin Burroughs, who has said that he's for this. And when the speaker votes one way or another on a piece of legislation, Chad, that generally means that the speaker is going to support Republicans who vote a certain way when something's controversial, and that means that the speaker will support them in their campaigns. I can remember years ago when Speaker Strauss was presiding over the House, and there would be some kind of a vote that we knew was going to be something that's going to be used against Republicans in their campaigns. Sometimes the speaker would weigh in and say, "Show the speaker voting aye," and I didn't quite understand the gravity of that at the time, but somebody leaned over and said, "That means he's one of the old timers in the House." They leaned over to me and said, "That means that the speaker is signaling to his members it's okay to vote for this because I'm going to have your back." if it's controversial in your campaign. It's kind of an interesting thing. It's symbolic. It's meaningful though. But I'm still. Here's the question I still have on this, and I saw that you had a back and forth with one of the hard right members of the Texas House, who's saying that the bill that's in the House now isn't enough, that it's not truly universal. And you had asked Representative Brian Harrison if he would say, hey, why doesn't he come up with a way to pay for it if we're going to make all of our 6 million? By the way, we always hear the number, Chad, 5.5 million or 5.6 million kids in K-12 education in Texas. It's probably more like 6 million. You know, we undercount everything around here.
Yeah.
So we probably have about 6 million kids who are in that system. And Brian Harrison is state representative from south of DFW. And he's saying, well, this doesn't go far enough. It's not truly universal. I agree with what you have said, Chad, which is like some of these folks, including the governor, including the people in-house leadership right now, who are saying, this is such a great school choice thing, but are they overselling it? I think was the way you said it.
Right.
They probably are. And here's the deal. Some of these other Republican states that have passed quote-unquote school choice legislation, they don't have the same challenge in setting that up that Texas does. When it comes to a place like Arizona or Florida or any of these other places that have a school choice program in a Republican state, they don't have the population that we have of kids who are in public education. They wouldn't have to come up with a way to pay for school vouchers for 6 million kids, right? And so if you look at it, it's almost impossible logistically to do that, right? And so you would still have the vast majority of kids in public education, and then some. I mean, in this piece of legislation, they're talking about less than 100,000 kids or so who would get the school voucher. Is that going to be enough for the folks who have been spending millions and millions of dollars to try to pass this thing? The Pennsylvania TikTok investor who has given Greg Abbott, I think, $11 million or so far to try to pass this thing. Is that enough for him? Is that enough for people like Brian Harrison, for some of those who want to what they would call a, quote, truly universal program? I don't know. And here's the thing. To have at this point in the legislative session, here we are on February 26th, when we have several months to go in this, and to really have it be on the razor's edge, as far as, to your point, razor's edge as far as the support, they're basically right at 76 or 77 votes. There's going to be some changes that are made to this, right? We know that homeschoolers are upset about this because of some of what's in that bill. We know that the Senate version and the House version are not the same. And as former Speaker Strauss used to say, Strauss, who I mentioned, he would say, look, if the House and Senate don't do the exact same thing on an issue, then that thing doesn't happen. And so you can still see that there are plenty of ways that this can break down.
Yeah, I look at it, I think that for Harrison, and maybe I'm wrong here, but most of these lawmakers who have been there for more than one session, the governor was calling this universal in the last session, mm-hmm. and only about 55,000 students were covered under the last bill. So this shouldn't surprise any of the lawmakers that it's being called universal. And it shouldn't be the big time backers. It shouldn't surprise them. And from what one lawmaker told me in an interview, that this is the most that any state has initially put forward on school choice out of any of the states. So, at least those who are the activist on this, they should be at least, thrilled with what we're moving forward. To me, I do wonder if some folks who want to be the rabble rousers, no matter what, if they're just going to use this to rabble and say that we didn't go far enough in conservative legislation. I think that's what this could be setting up for in the future.
Right, and let's pull back and just talk raw politics, which is the point that you're getting to. How often has it been the case in Republican politics, especially over the last 15 to 20 years, that if you're not 100% where the activist folks want you to be, then it's not good enough? right? I mean, that's been the case, and that's why, I mean, look at all of the Republican members who were challenged in their races last year by the governor and by the activist class over this issue of school choice. That look, I mean, if you pull back from the issue, you had all of these Republicans who agree with Governor Abbott 99% of the time. And he took out a whole bunch of them just because they don't agree on this one issue. If you then drill down on the issue and folks really want something that they could call universal, that all of these, that every kid in Texas would be eligible for it, which is really unworkable. You just can't do it, especially right out of the gate. There are going to be, you know, quite a few of them who just don't agree with this at all. And of course, even though some of the incumbent Republicans who disagree with this policy were, you know, were defeated in their primaries, there are still a lot of Republican activists, very conservative folks, precinct chairs, the heads of different organizations, who just don't agree with school vouchers at all. That element is still there too.
Yeah.
And so I think, to your point originally, as you brought up this topic, I think if they're, I don't think that Chairman Buckley is declaring victory at this point just yet. And that would be premature. I would point people to the comments that Chairman Buckley made in the very first hearing of the Public Education Committee for this year, where he said this, and I'm paraphrasing, but you can see the video. It's right there on my Twitter feed, Chad. The chairman said that there is no doubt that the House is going to vote to make it a historic investment in public education this session. And they're talking about up to $8 billion additional dollars for our public schools. And then when it came to education savings accounts, school vouchers, what he said is the committee's going to debate it. Yeah. Right. So he wasn't as bullish in his public commentary. And I would say there's probably a reason. And that was this week. That was just shown within the last 24, 48 hours. There's a reason he's hedging on that.
Yeah. Scott, what else can people find over at quorumreport.com?
We're keeping track of all of it for you. Everything happening in your state government, you can see it in real time. Quorumreport.com. Just go to pre-sign up, and we'll get you going.
Very good, Scott. Senor Braddock, as always, we appreciate it, and we'll visit with you next week.
From now on, they're going to call me the senior editor.
I like that. I like that.
Thanks, Chad.
Thank you, Scott. Have a great one. That's Scott Braddock. When we come back, well, we'll begin to close things out. It's the end of the show, just like that. We'll be right back.
The Titan of Texas Talk Radio, The Chad Hasty Show.
Talking with newsmakers and about the issues that matter to you. The Chad Hasty Show, weekdays from 5 to 7 p.m. Chad's show is also digital with The Chad Hasty Show podcast. The Chad Hasty Show podcast can be downloaded on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Spotify, and the Radio On Demand page on KFYO.com. The Chad Hasty Show, all across Texas during your drive home, weekdays from 5 to 7 p.m.
We live Texas, we breathe Texas. The landmarks, the swagger, and the lore make us who we are. We devour the tastes and the smells of our state. You just might say there's something in the air. So do your part to help protect it. Keep your tires at the correct pressure and avoid idling at drive-thrus. Both help reduce emissions. For tips, visit drivecleantexas.org. Drive clean, Texas. Live and breathe it. Brought to you by TxDOT.